What is truth? Now, Pilate asked the right question. Granted, he was sneering. Granted, it wasn't sincere. But ironically, the truth is standing before him as he's asking the question. So we'll take his question and use it in a sincere way and ask, what is truth? And the answer is, truth is what corresponds to the facts. If I say I have a bottle of water in my right hand, it's true because, in fact, there is a bottle of water in my right hand. If I said, now there's a bottle of water in my right hand, it's false because there's not one. Truth corresponds to the facts. Or to put another way, truth matches its object. If I say there's a brown glass case in my left hand, indeed the statement is true because it matches the object. There is an object, a brown glass case in my left hand. Or in everyday language, truth is telling it like it is. Now, of course, as we'll find, falsehood is not corresponding to the facts, not matching its object, or not telling it like it is. This object is a table. That statement is true only because it points to a referent out there, a table that is actually there. If there were no table there, if there was a chair there, the statement wouldn't be true. What is false then? Well, false is the opposite of true. It doesn't correspond to the facts. It doesn't match its object, and it doesn't tell it like it is. There's nothing tricky about truth. Everybody uses the same definition of truth in everyday life. Even those who deny truth use the same definition. This is called the law of non-contradiction. I understand from talking to Dr. McFarland at the break that she talked a little bit about this in the last class, if you were there. The opposite of true is false. Opposite ideas cannot both be true at the same time in the same sense. This can't be a square and a circle at the same time in the same sense. It's impossible because they're opposite ideas. And of course, the earth is either round or it's not round. Can't both be not round and round. All of these are common sense type of things, but philosophers deny common sense. They deny the obvious, and so we have to affirm the redundant. The opposite of true is false. Avicenna, the great Muslim philosopher of the Middle Ages, put it this way: anyone who denies the law of non-contradiction should be beaten and burned until he admits that to be beaten is not the same as not to be beaten, and to be burned is not the same as not to be burned. So basically, all you have to do to prove to somebody that he does believe in the law of non-contradiction is kick him in the shins and say, is that the same as not to be kicked in the shins? And if he hasn't punched you in the nose by that time, then he's gotten a point. Answering objections to this view of truth. You remember, the way to answer an objection is to take it, state it clearly, and then turn it on itself. That's called the principle of self-defeating the argument, or self-stultification. Let me give you some examples. I cannot speak a word in English is a self-defeating statement because it's a word in English saying you can't speak a word in English. Didn't he say that in English would be the response? Well, let's apply it to truth. Suppose somebody says, well, I don't agree with your definition of truth. Truth is not telling it like it is. Then you say to him, is that telling it like it is? Because he's telling it like it is, telling you the truth is not telling it like it is. But if truth is not telling it like it is, then why does he want us to take his statement as telling it like it is? Self-destructive. Opposites can both be true. You say, well, how is that possible? Well, it's not. They don't believe the opposite of that is true. They don't believe the opposite of the statement, opposites can both be true, is true. That's our view, that opposites can't both be true. Well, if opposites can both be true, then the opposite of that would have to be true. If the opposite of that isn't true, then opposites can't be true, in which case they believe what we believe. My granddaughter is getting her first experience at the big university this year. She was homeschooled and then went to Christian school here and graduated from seminary, and she heard this stuff all her life, and today she's saying, hey, these guys actually believe this. I'm in literature class and they actually teach this. I mean, they're living, well, talking people who are making statements like this. Her professor just said to her, this is University of North Carolina, all truth is relative. And she was so excited, she could hardly wait to ask him if that was an absolutely true statement, you know. There is no truth. Well, is that true? If that's a truth claim, then there is a truth. If it's not a truth claim, then it's not even in the marketplace, not even in the ballpark. Can't even play the game. You can't know truth. Well, how do you know that? If you can't know truth, then how do you know that's true? And if you know that's true, then you can know truth. And if you can know truth, why can't I know that truth too? You're not the only one in the world that can know a truth. There is no absolute truth. And we respond, is that absolutely true? Is that absolutely true? I've actually had professors do this. I went to two secular schools, among a few other schools, and I had a professor say that once. There is no absolute truth. Well, either his statement is absolutely true, and there is absolute truth, or his statement isn't absolutely true, and why should I believe that as opposed to believing anything else? It's true for you, but not for me. This is probably the most common way you'll hear it said in our society. People feel a lot more comfortable if they don't impose their truth on someone else. So it may be true for you, but it's not true for me, or maybe true for me, but not true for you. Now you can imagine what this does to Christianity and to missions. We believe that Christ is the truth. He's the only way to God. You go to your neighbor, and if that's just your truth, then what is your neighbor thinking? He's thinking, well, that's nice for him. I mean, Jesus is his guru, and I'm so happy that he feels good about his religion, but that's not true for me. I mean, it totally destroys the ability to evangelize. So this is not just trivial stuff we're talking about. It's at the very heart of what we believe and the very heart of what we believe about witnessing to others. Just say to somebody, is that just true for you, but not for me? See, is his relativism relative for everybody, or is it absolute for everybody else? It's true for you, but not for me. Well, is that just true for you? Maybe that's just true for you, that statement, and not true for me. He wouldn't admit that. No one knows the truth, of course, except that guy who just said that, right? Then how do you know that that's true? If nobody knows the truth, then neither do you know that truth, that no one knows the truth. Truth about God isn't objective. Now, here's a little more subtle form. Once in a while, you get this from naive Christians. You get it from religious people who say, well, religious truth, it's not like scientific truth or common everyday truth. You know, this is a bottle, this is a glass case. It's personal, it's experiential, it's relational. And when you're talking about God, things are not objectively true. They're just subjectively true. They're true for me, but not really true in and of themselves. Well, take that statement. The truth about God isn't objective. Is that an objective statement about God? See, that claims to be an objective statement about God, to wit, that you can't make objective statements about God. So if you say, no statement about God is objectively true, then you can ask, how about that statement? Is that statement about God objectively true? If it isn't, then why should I believe it? If it is, then statements about God can be objectively true, and you just made one saying you can't make them. Here's the truth about truth. Here's what to remember about truth. All truth claims are absolute, narrow, and exclusive. Even the claim that every religion is true excludes its opposite. This is a very important point. Everybody, including the pluralist, who says pluralism is true, is making an objective statement. I was debating Dr. Michael Constantine Kalenda at Rice University, and he made a statement like that. He said, you Christians are narrow-minded. You think only your view is true. And he held up my book and said, look at Geisler, and these Christians are narrow-minded. So when it was my turn to speak, I held up his book and said, look at these humanists, how narrow-minded they are, because they think humanism is true and everything opposed to it is false. Who's more narrow, the person who says Christianity is true and everything opposed to it is false, or the person who says pluralism is true and everything opposed to it is false? They're both equally narrow claims, right? In fact, the most narrow-minded person I encountered early in my life was Miss Knepple. Did you say who? Miss Knepple. That was my kindergarten teacher's name. I didn't name her, so don't blame me. And Miss Knepple would look at me and she would say, Norman Leo. I knew I was in trouble when she threw my middle name in there. She'd say, Norman Leo, what's 2 plus 2? And I'd say, 5. Whack on the hand with a ruler. That's what they did in those days. Now, she was so narrow-minded that of the infinite number of numbers, 1 through infinity, that I could have chosen from, she wanted me to pick 1 and only 1, the one she thought was right. Don't you think that's narrow-minded? I mean, if I had said 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, or any number to infinity, I would have gotten an infinite number of whacks. Narrow-minded person, wouldn't you say? That's the way truth is. Truth is narrow-minded. Truth is narrow and exclusive. Even the claim that every religion is true excludes its opposite. What's the opposite? Not every religion is true. The claim that every religion is true sounds more open-minded, but it's just as narrow as the exclusivist, that's us. The opposite of true is false. Second thing to know about truth, truth is discovered, not invented. It existed independently of anyone's knowledge of it. Do you know that gravity existed prior to Newton? You know that when Adam and Eve took the bite out of the apple and dropped the core on the ground, that it went down? You know, it didn't go right, didn't go left, didn't go up. Do you know that truth was there before anybody discovered truth? That the laws of math were there before anyone discovered them? The laws of physics were there? Newton did not invent gravity. And Aristotle did not invent logic. They discovered it because it's part of the furniture of the universe. Truth is discovered, not invented. 3, belief cannot change the fact no matter how sincerely it's held. I can sincerely believe the world is flat. It only makes me sincerely wrong. If I tell you, now the way to get to Raleigh from here is you take 45, you go down again on 45, you take it up to 85, you get to 85, turn left, and you'll eventually get to Raleigh. You may, but it'll be about 25,000 miles. You'll probably have to go through some water and some ice on the way there. Doesn't matter how sincere I was sincerely wrong. So beliefs cannot change a fact no matter how sincerely they're held. If you took a survey of people, you would discover that the vast majority of people out there believe as long as you're sincere in whatever you believe, you're going to make it to heaven. False. You can be as sincere as the day is long. And 2 plus 2 is not going to be 5. It's not going to be 23. You can say, I want to be sincere about history, and I like, let's see, Martin Luther tacked up his 95 theses, and I like nice round numbers. Let's say 1,500. I don't like specific numbers. No, it was 1517. Doesn't matter how much you like round numbers, how cozy they feel to you, or what you think, it's false. Beliefs cannot change the fact no matter how sincerely they're held. 4, do you know that truth transcends culture? That 2 plus 2 is 4 here, there, and everywhere? Do you know it's true in Moscow, Peking? You go to Mars, and it still adds up to the same thing? Do you know that if you do it in French, it's the same? German, the same? Swahili, the same? Every language, every culture, everywhere you go, truth transcends the culture. The guys who started this whole mess in the modern world saying everything is culturally relative in terms of meaning were named Frege and Saussure, and they influenced a guy named Wittgenstein. You can tell with names like that, you're in trouble already, right? Frege, Saussure, and Wittgenstein. Truth is transcultural. They say that it's all culturally relative. Even the laws of logic are culturally relative. The laws of math are culturally relative. How do you get culturally relative? This is not culturally relative. We didn't say, Adam didn't say, there's 2, and he counted them, got 4, and that was just true in his culture. No, everybody anywhere in the world that sticks up two fingers on the right hand and two fingers on the left hand and counts them, it's four, right? It's not culturally relative. Truth transcends culture. Now here we get even more poignant. Being raised in a given culture doesn't make their beliefs true. I just responded to an atheist who wrote a book. He was an evangelical Christian, actually apologist, actually student of William Lane Craig. And he wrote a book defending his atheism. He became an atheist. And he said, well, now, just look at it. Most of the people in India turn out being Hindus, right? Most of the people in the Far East turn out being Buddhists. Most of the people in Christian countries turn out being Christian. You're not going to tell me that the culture doesn't affect their belief, and you're not going to tell me that just because they were raised in that culture that their view is wrong. Yes, I'm going to tell you that their view is wrong if it doesn't correspond to the facts, if it doesn't tell it like it is, if it doesn't match its object. Because what is truth? What matches its object, what tells it like it is. And it doesn't matter what culture you're raised in, it doesn't make the beliefs true. For example, being raised a Nazi didn't make Nazism true. They tried that at the Nuremberg trials. I don't know if few people in this room are old enough to remember Adolf Eichmann. He was Hitler's right-hand man. He masterminded the killing of 12 million Jews. 6 million Jews and 6 million non-Jews, 12 million people. And at his trial, the Israeli commandos caught him in Argentina and South America, dragged him back to the Near East, and there they had a trial for him. And his whole defense was, I was reared in a Nazi culture, I believed Nazism was true, and I was just following the commands. Just following the commands. They didn't buy it. You know what? They all got sentenced, all the Nuremberg people who got caught. Why? Because they said there is a law that transcends culture that says that's wrong. Genocide is wrong. And you can't just say I was following the command. Well, my bigger brother told me to stick my little brother's head under the water for 5 minutes. I was just doing what my bigger brother said. This is still wrong. And you can't use it. Being raised in a Nazi culture didn't make Nazism true. And being raised in a racist culture doesn't make racism true. Now, I was raised in the most racist city in the United States. You may be surprised where it was. It was not Birmingham, Alabama. It was a northern city. For those of you who think that there's not racism in the north, I was reared in the north. There's more racism in the north probably than there is in the south. And I was raised in Detroit, Michigan. We had race wars, outright race wars twice, where people were shooting each other, using knives in the streets, twice while I was growing up, race wars. It's a very racist city. My brother-in-law is so racist that he could be Archie Bunker. He wouldn't have to play. He wouldn't need a script. You could just follow him around with a tape recorder all day long and have the script for the program, really. I was raised in that culture, so I'm a racist and I can't help it, right? Wrong. Being raised in a racist culture doesn't make racism true. And being raised as a bigot doesn't make bigotry true. And being raised by intolerant people doesn't make intolerance true. There's an objective standard out there that we have to match our statements to correspond to them. Being raised in a given culture doesn't make their beliefs true. Do you know that one's attitude doesn't change the truth? My daughter came home from school, I think it was about the sixth grade, my oldest daughter, Ruth, and she said, I can't stand my history teacher. I said, what's wrong with him? That guy doesn't know anything but facts. Well, it's not bad if you're a history teacher knowing some facts. She didn't like his attitude, you know. His attitude was, facts are the most important thing in the world. He knew all the facts. You got to know all the facts if you don't have them right. And she couldn't stand his attitude. Does that justify her saying that Columbus discovered America in 1392? No. One's attitude doesn't change the truth. Suppose you have an obnoxious math teacher, and so you grow up and say, she was so obnoxious that she said 7 times 3 is 21. I'm going to say 22. I just didn't like her, so I'm going to conclude 22. You going to get a job in a local bank? I don't think for long you are. One's attitude doesn't change the truth. Now, notice how this applies. A bad attitude about truth doesn't make it into an error. Suppose somebody has the truth and they have a bad attitude. Suppose you have an ugly Christian teaching the truth. Does that make it false? No. Suppose you have a nice, humble atheist teaching atheism. Does that make it true? No. Now, we hasten to say, the Ephesians 4 is in the Bible, and it says, speak the truth in love, and we should be both humble and true and loving and truth. We're not saying that you need either. We're just saying if you have a bad attitude about the truth, it doesn't change the truth value. If you have a good attitude about error, it doesn't change the fact that it's an error, which is the second part of it. A good attitude about error doesn't make it true. All of the heretics I have known in my, next year will be my 50th year of teaching, all the heretics I have met over the years were all nice guys. All the people who denied some essential doctrine, every single one of them was a nice guy. Clark Pinnock was a nice guy. Murray Harris was a nice guy. All of the guys I knew who had denied some fundamental doctrine were just nice guys. And it was just hard to say that they could possibly be wrong because they were so nice. Does that make it true? Arius was a nice guy. Arius was a guy who denied the deity of Christ back there in the 4th century, and Athanasius came along, defended it, and most of the churches in the East were Arian, and he had a missionary society, and he was a church planter. He was just a nice guy, but he was an early Jehovah's Witness. He said Jesus wasn't the eternal God. He was like God. He was a created being. Good attitude doesn't make error into truth, and a bad attitude doesn't make truth into error. 7, objective truth can't be denied. The denial of objective truth makes a claim to be an objective truth. How are you going to deny objective truth? If you attempt to deny it, you're either making an objective statement or you aren't. If you're making an objective statement, then you really affirmed it indirectly. You can't deny objective truth without making an objective truth claim. The claim that there is no objective truth is an objective truth claim. The claim that there is no objective truth is an objective truth claim. Now, what I'm telling you, this first part of what we're covering tonight, I wish I knew when I was going to secular university, because professors are standing up there, mouthing off all the time, making these self-defeating statements, and no one puts their foot to the fire. Almost no one is trained to do it. And it's such an easy thing to do once you learn how to do it. Take their statement, turn it on itself. It's just as self-defeating as I cannot speak a word in English. The truth about truth. Contrary beliefs are possible, but contrary truths are not possible. See, the half-truth of what they're talking about is that you can have contrary beliefs. You can believe that there's a little green gremlin moving hands on the dial of my watch. I can't disprove it, you know. You can believe any cockamamie thing you want to, but not every cockamamie thing can be true. Opposite beliefs are possible, but opposite truths are not possible. You can believe everything is true, but everything can't be true. Sure, there are all kinds of beliefs, and many of them are mutually exclusive, but they can't all be true. Objective truth can't be denied without being affirmed. It is literally undeniable. Truth is literally undeniable. Now, this is what I call parabolic apologetics. In fact, I just finished a manuscript on a book on the apologetics of Jesus, one of the most fascinating books I've ever written. And it really came out well because I went through every aspect of Jesus' life and showed how he used apologetics. Parables was one of the primary way he used apologetics. And parables are no more or less than a story that has a point. And it's a story that the audience believes the point, and then you pour your truth into the point they already believe so they can't deny it. That's parabolic apologetics. I'm going to do now for you a little parabolic apologetics from contemporary culture. And the bottom line is going to be, I'm going to show you that everybody believes in absolute truth. There really aren't any relativists. Everybody believes in absolute truth. When it comes to safety, for example, you buy a new car, you strap your new baby in the back seat, you put the buckle in, the first light, you got to slam on your brakes, somebody's coming through the light, and the buckle breaks, and the baby is injured, or, God forbid, the baby is killed. There's going to be a lawsuit, right? And if the manufacturer says, well, we believe deeply down in our heart, we have a warm feeling in our heart that that seatbelt was safe, you're not going to buy it, are you? You're going to want to know the absolute truth. Was that a defective seatbelt or was it not? And you're not going to settle for anything less than the absolute truth. Nobody does when it comes to safety, especially if they're the ones that are suffering the loss. Suppose you go to your bank account. Suppose you think you have $5,000 there, and the teller says you have $50. Well, it's true for her, right? No. I don't know a single person. I don't know the world's greatest relativist who would say, well, that's true for you. You know? No, it's not. It's either 5,000 or it's not 5,000, and it's 5,000 for everybody. It's 5,000 for her, it's 5,000 for me. When it comes to money, everybody believes in absolute truth. When it comes to medicine, everybody believes in absolute truth. Why? Well, this actually happened to me. 4 years ago, this very time, no, it's next month, 4 years ago, next month, I was speaking in Lake Junaluska to a group of Methodists. I just had a lithotripsy, which is to break up a kidney stone. The lithotripsy caused poison to go in my system, and I got sepsis. Now, if you don't know what sepsis is, ask a doctor or a nurse. 40% of the people who get it die on the spot. So I had almost 50-50 chance to die. I clunked out for about 3 hours. The sepsis had totally taken over my body, shut down all the organs, caused a heart attack, and I'm in the hospital there by Lake Junaluska, west of Asheville, and I'm lying down in the ER room, and there are two things you don't want to hear in the ER room. Oops, or oh no. You don't want to hear either of those. And I'm lying down there, and I vomited up blood after all of this. And the doctor knew what that meant, and he said, oh, no. Then he said to my wife, I don't think he's going to make it. Not a good feeling to have. Fortunately, this was the weekend, and so there was no one there to do the test to see which germs I had. They gave me three high-powerful medicines, just guessing, and two kicked in. Or else I'd have been dead right away on the weekend. So I'm lying there in the hospital for the next few days, and the vultures come in at night. No offense, Angie. The blood letters come in, and they swoop down in your room, and they jab you, and they let blood out of you. And they had two of them, one on my right and one on my left. And the one on my right was saying something to the one on the left. And they looked, and there was a pink bracelet on my right arm that said Gillespie. And there was a pink bracelet on my left hand that said Geisler. And they looked at me and they said, what's your name? I said, you tell me. I know what my name is. I want to know you know what my name is. And I want to know before you stick any more needles in me, is Gillespie alive? Did he get my medicine? Is he dead? Am I going to die? Did I get his medicine? There's not a person in the world that if their loved one had died there wouldn't be a lawsuit, right? Why? Because everybody believes in the absolute truth. Am I Gillespie? Am I not? Is this the right medicine for me or is it not? Advertise, you buy something, you put $2,000 in the best beach blaster you could get, right? And it doesn't work. And you got static in the speakers and You take it back and they say, well, we think it's good. No, our company is a company of integrity. We just don't make bad instruments. Well, this is one. Advertising, $2,000 at stake. You're going to want to know the absolute truth. Is it or is it not? She's cheating on me. Or he's cheating on me. Well, he thinks he isn't. Doesn't matter what he thinks. We want to know the facts. Is he or is he not? When it comes to relationship, everybody believes in absolute truth. There are no relativists. When it comes to transportation, everybody believes in moral absolutes. When it comes to court proceedings, I have never been in a court where the judge said, would you raise your hand and swear to tell the relative, the whole relative, and nothing but the relative, so help me future experience. And you never will be in a court where the judge says that. Why? Because you could never determine who's at fault and who needs to pay and who needs to be punished. Court proceedings, you have to say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. The courts believe in absolute truth. So why not in religion? If you wouldn't trust your money on anything less than absolute truth, why would you trust your eternal soul on anything less? If you wouldn't trust your baby in the back seat on anything less than the absolute truth, or what your husband or your wife is saying, why are you going to trust an eternal relationship with the eternal God and say, well, it doesn't really matter what you believe. It's all relative. No, it's not all relative. Not here, not there, not anywhere. Everywhere, it's absolute. Truth is undeniable in religion too. The claim that religious truth is subjective is an objective truth claim about religion. The claim that it's just subjective to you is an objective claim in itself. And the claim that religious truth is not objective claims to be an objective truth about religion.